Good morning, everybody. I would like to start by thanking the organizers for the kind invitation to come here and talk about our work. And well, as the chairman mentioned, I'm going to talk about one-dimensional systems. And there are quite a few nice things about one-dimensional systems. The first one is that now, thanks to experiments in cold gases, we can have nice realizations of one-dimensional systems. So it's very fun to have interaction between theory and experiment and really see these things in nature and with the degree of controllability that cold atom systems have. And the second reason is that from a theoretical point of view, in one dimension we have many tools that we can use to study interacting quantum systems in strongly correlated regimes. So I think that this is also very useful when you're trying to understand properties of a strongly correlated system. So let me reverse the order of subjects in my talk, in my title, and start by telling you what's new. And I put new between quotes because, well, as the referees of, as the editors of Physical Review have told us, what's new and what is not is a highly subjective matter. So let me just start considering classical fluids. And the most common classical fluid you can find on Earth is, of course, water. And in the school we were taught that there are three phases around atmospheric pressure and temperature: liquid, solid, and vapor, and gas. And if you take like a liquid phase and you just make a thin film of it and place it between a cold spot and a hot spot, what's interesting is that you will see appearing very interesting structures after some time, which are sort of stationary states known as Rayleigh-Bernard convection shells, and they turn out to be rather stable. But what's interesting about these structures is that there is no hint in the equilibrium phase diagram about the existence of such a thing. I mean, this type of non-equilibrium states do not appear at all, do not seem to depend on the properties of the system in equilibrium. So you just need to take one of the equilibrium states and drive it out of equilibrium, and we will find non-equilibrium states. So the question that I would like to address in the first part of this talk is whether, if you are concerned about quantum fluids, we could have also similar non-equilibrium states which have properties, emerging properties, that are not related to their equilibrium properties. So I think that until recently, these kind of questions were a little bit of academic questions, because if you think of quantum fluids, it's actually very hard to sort of study non-equilibrium dynamics in them. So if you take solid state systems, for instance, they are always strongly coupled to the environment. And that means that if we try to study time-dependent phenomena, the coherence is going to be a problem, because the system is not going to stay coherent, fully coherent for a long time. And also, in solid state systems, the degree of tunability is rather limited. So I think that the first time people realized that one could actually study the coherent evolution of many body systems, the strongly interacting many body systems, was when people started to study strongly interacting both gases. And in particular, the experiments in the Murie group were like the first ones to demonstrate that one can study the dynamics in also between two strongly correlated phases in cold gases. So I will not describe the experiment that mainly motivated most of the research that I'm going to describe in the first part of this talk, because the following talk by David Weiss will give you a nice report on it. But I just would like to mention that in one-dimensional systems, there is an interesting question, which was raised by this experiment, and whether it concerns whether if you prepare a one-dimensional system in a state that is not an eigenstate of a Hamiltonian, it will actually relax to a thermal state. Right? And let me give you a more precise statement of what the problem is. So let me just assume that I have prepared a time zero, my system in a certain state, which is not an eigenstate of Hamiltonian, and this could be, for instance, the result of suddenly changing a certain parameter in my Hamiltonian. So within the sudden approximation that I have to do, I take this state and time evolve with a different Hamiltonian. Now I can look at expectation values of operators observable, which are computed in this way. And the question I'm going to be concerned about is whether the system actually reaches some sort of a stationary or quasi-stationary state. And if I sort of, after some time, T0, I sort of time average the value of the observable or the operator, whether I can get these time averages from some kind of a statistical ensemble. And you might understand that these type of questions are sort of related to the ergodic policies in statistical mechanics, because the ergodic hypothesis tells us that this type of averages, time averages, should be related to some kind of thermal ensemble, average over some thermal ensemble. So, well, let me give you a particular example of this. But just before I go into details, I would like to tell you that I'm not very interested in another interesting problem that arises in this type of experiments where you sort of quench the system, you change suddenly the parameters of the system, of the Hamiltonian, which is the creation of defects. And I mean, Stanford Kern also talked about this, and the thing that is supported by Dansky, he also talked about this. So let me consider a nice work by Marcos de Gaulle and collaborators, where they looked at the XY model in one dimension. It's an interval model, which describes Hartree bosons, which you can, for instance, describe in terms of Pauli matrices. And, well, it turns out that this model can be exactly solved by using a non-local transformation between the Hartree bosons and some fermions, which are called Jordan-Bechner fermions. And Hamiltonian is diagonal in this operators which measure the occupancy of this Jordan-Bechner fermion. So I would like to show you an animation of what happens when you take this system and you shall allow it to expand freely from a smaller size box. And what you have here is the density, you have here is the momentum distribution. And you can see that the momentum distribution is sort of reaching a sort of a steady state where essentially it doesn't change in time after you sort of release the atoms from a smaller box, which is 100 lattice spacing, and they expand into a much larger box, which is 600 times the atomic. So what is interesting about this is that well, if you look, for instance, at the momentum distribution of field momentum, as you could see in the previous animation, it has some time-dependent transient behavior, but after some time, it becomes sort of stable. And if you now look at the entire momentum distribution, it sort of establishes at this in this curve, right? Which, if you try now to fit to a grand canonical momentum distribution, which you could, for which you can extract the temperature from the mean kinetic energy, you see that it's very different. So it's actually, this system is not thermalizing after the quench. And what was very insightful in this paper is that the authors conjectured that this new distribution, which is not thermal, could be actually obtained from a different ensemble, which follows from some maximum entropy principle, where if you take into account that your system is interval, there are a large number of intervals of motion, then essentially each interval of motion, these intervals of motion are initialized at the initial time, and you have, and they constrain the dynamics. And as a consequence, they will also lead the system to a different state, which is not the thermal state. So with this motivation, I thought that maybe one could find an analytical model where one could actually obtain analytical results for this type of situation. So this model is a very old one. It's called the Latimer model. It was introduced by Latimer in the 60s, and it's a model which describes two kinds of fermions, which have linear dispersions. It's a bit weird because this is it's unbounded from below, so you have to sort of fill infinite levels to make a stable ground state. And what's interesting about this model is that, well, when Latinger introduced it and solved it, he didn't find the right solution. And the right solution was found by Mathis and Lee afterwards, based on previous work by Quintino Tomolaga, where he had noticed that in the one-dimensional electron gas, the density operators approximately obey some anomalous commutation relations. And it's this property that actually allows you to find an exact solution to this model. Because as you might remember, the interactions are quadratic in density operators. So this strongly resembles a harmonic oscillator algebra. So now, since the density, the components of the density operator are harmonic oscillators, you can sort of solve the Hamiltonian in terms of harmonic oscillators. Now, you might have heard that this model is related to what people call Tomolaga-Latinger liquids. And indeed, this model describes the low energy properties of a more generic class of models, as was noticed by Dr. Haldane. Among the properties that this model has is that many of the correlation functions obey power law correlations that they have. So the system has always quasi long range order, which is a characteristic of many one-dimensional systems at zero temperature. And in particular, if you look at the momentum distribution, there is for fermions, there is a sort of power law singularity at the fermion level, which signals the absence of any quasi-particle excitation. So this is very different from what you have in higher dimensions. So how about the system when you perform a quench? And the simplest quench you can think of in this model is you go from a state, which is the ground state of the non-interacting system, to a state where you suddenly turn on the interactions, and it's described, the time evolution in that situation is described by this other Hamiltonian, which is diagonalized by a different set of harmonic oscillators. And these two harmonic oscillator operators are related by Bogolyubov transformation, of what people call in quantum optics squeezing transformation. Okay, so the solution out of equilibrium, so that's the solution in equilibrium. The solution out of equilibrium is also very simple. It's also another canonical transformation, a little bit more complicated with time-dependent coefficients. But I must tell you that this is all that one needs. And also some results coming from equilibrium as how to express these operators, for instance, the single particle field operators in terms of these harmonic oscillator fields. This is all one needs to compute quantities, operators like, well, this is not an observable, but this is time evolution of the one particle density matrix. So just let me jump to the result. So in the thermodynamic limit, the result looks relatively simple. It's a sort of product of three terms. One is the free one particle correlation function, and then there are some power loss. But maybe this is not very clear, so maybe it's better to perform a Fourier transform and get the momentum distribution at time t. And what you get is the following picture. So initially, you start from a state which is the ground state for non interacting fermions. So there is a jump in the momentum distribution, as you know from textbook statistical mechanics, and the jump is exactly one. Now, at any finite time, the system evolves to a state whose momentum distribution has a smaller jump, and which is produced in a sort of power law fashion. And at long times, the system reaches a steady state, time-independent state, at infinite time in principle at zero temperature, which is this, where the momentum distribution is described by a similar form, similar expression to what you have at equilibrium. But there is an important difference. And the difference is that the exponent that you get here, this sort of critical exponent, is different from the equilibrium strain. And believe me, people have spent a lot of time classifying all possible exponents in these models and related models, which belong to this university class called thermodynamic analysis of the liquid. And for me, at least, it came as a surprise that these exponents would not be easily related. And if you want, I can write it in terms of the so-called Latin liquid parameters, will not be easily related to equilibrium exponents. So in a sense, it has this flavor that you get to a steady state whose properties are not at all sort of, or not easily related to equilibrium properties. Right? And also, it came as a surprise to me that if one defines a sort of simple maximal entropy or generalized Gibbs distribution, which is similar to what the distribution that it has been introduced by Marcus Dittmann and co-workers, but in for this model you have to use the intervals of motion to correspond to the occupancies of the bosons that diagonalize the interacting Hamiltonian, you get that this ensemble already explains the form of this asymptotic correlation function at infinite time. So this is also a surprise, and was a surprise to me. And it turns out that this result also, you get the same result if you consider other simple correlation functions as the density and the correlation function. So, well, I'm not here to tell you my agenda, and definitely I'm not going to convince any fundamentalists to realize this model in nature, but there is a here's a suggestion of where this kind of calculations could be relevant. And in particular, if you consider a one-dimensional dipolar gas of spin polarized fermions, it's not a Latinger model, but it belongs to this universality class of the so-called thermodynamic Latinger liquid. And you can expect that, if you perform a quench here, maybe some of the properties that some of the results that I have described before could be applied in this case. So let me just consider this system, and since these are dipoles, the interaction is long range, and it will be described by this asymptotically by this expression here. But what's interesting about this expression is that there is a geometric factor which accounts for the fact that the dipoles might be aligned by an external electric field in a direction which is different from the direction of motion, and this allows you to set at a particular angle between the direction of motion and the electric field the interaction to zero. So you can actually perform this quench experiment very simply by rapidly varying the direction of the electric field away from this magic angle where the interaction vanishes. And one can now compare what would happen if you sort of evaporative cool the fermions to the same temperature, keeping the electric field in a given direction that in the same direction that is the final angle that's where you perform the quench. And what you should expect is typically to see something like this. So in equilibrium, you see this sort of momentum distribution. After the quench, you should see some momentum distribution which is more extended. And the reason is that the initial state is not the ground state of the interacting Hamiltonian. It's an excited state of the interacting Hamiltonian that contains many particle hole pairs. And asymptotically, these particle hole pairs you will have to accumulate to accommodate these excitations in higher and in momentum levels that are acquired from the Fermi momentum. So that's why you get this more extended momentum distribution. And it turns out that you actually don't need to be at zero temperature, because if you sort of study what happens at finite temperature, the system will reach the steady state in a time which is of the order of h bar divided by the temperature. So, this might be one possible experimental observation, but sometimes it's hard to distinguish momentum distributions, especially for fermions. and one can probably use other prompts like noise correlation. Now in the remaining part of the talk, I would like to describe other problems where in the presence quantities also can an effect on not non-equilibrium properties, but also on ground state properties, and in particular on the phase diagram. And I think that Wolfgang Tetzel told us on the first day that if you take a counter consistent and you prepare the system with a given magnetization, it will stay put. It will not change in time because opposed to condensed matter systems, there are no spin relaxation mechanisms that will flip the spins of the atom. And that might also have some impact on some effect on the ground state of the system, as I showed you. So let's consider two-dimensional optical lattice, where one can sort of confine atoms in very tight one-dimensional traps. And well, this was realized by a number of groups, but in particular, using fermions was done by the Turing group. And one can now apply periodic potential along the direction of the motion of the atoms in the tube. And there are two possibilities. One could actually load this trap with this optical lattice with two different species of atoms, or as demonstrated by the Mainz group, you could also use an internal state dependent optical lattice. And essentially, the minimal model you end up with to describe the system is a very simple Haber model with asymmetric Hawking. Now, if you consider that you load the system with equal number of spin up and down fermions, so you have a fixed magnetization, which is zero, there is an interesting consequence to this. Instead of what you would have in a condensed matter system, where after some time the magnetization would relax and you would end up with zero magnetization and you have four Fermi points, in this system you have only two Fermi points. And this, together with the fact that your Hamiltonian no longer has SU2 symmetry, it's no longer potential invariant, leads to the possibility of having spin gap phases in your phase diagram. So if now you study the phase diagram of this model, which is very simple, taking into account that there is another knob, which is the difference in Hawking, you find that depending on whether the interactions are repulsive or attractive, you can have spin density wave phases or superfluid or sensitivity wave phases. And well, there are some results in the limit of very different Hawkings, which suggest that even for repulsive interactions, the system at sufficiently strong repulsion the particles with different spins would segregate. So let me just give you a cartoon explanation to this for this phase diagram. So just let me explain you a little bit what a one-dimensional system looks like. It's actually very much what you can get in a traffic jam. So if you look at the typical distance between cars in a traffic jam, they are more or less all moving very slowly, so the distance is more or less if you look at short ranges, the distance is more or less the same between cars, but at long distances you cannot expect that the arrangement to be periodic, so there will be deviations from periodicity, and that leads to sort of the quasi long range order that we observe in one dimensional system. So you can picture a one dimensional system as a sort of a crystal, which is crystal in a short range, short distance, but at long distances is disordered. Now let me take two kinds of atoms in one dimension, and one of them is heavier, like for instance the spin down atoms will be heavier than the spin up. So if I take the heavier atoms, you can imagine that the short distance periodic arrangement of the heavy atoms will provide, in the case of attractive interactions, a periodic potential for the light atom, where the minimum of the potential sits at the position of the heavy atom. So now the heavy atoms will be brightly affected by this, which leads to the formation of a spin gap, and in particular they will sit next to the heavy atoms. So they will form pairs, and it's the precise sort of formula, there are further interactions between this pairs what leads you to having a superfluid or a charging wave system. On the other hand, if you have repulsive interactions, now the minima of the periodic potential sits in between the atoms, and the light atoms will remain more or less in between. And this indeed looks like a thin density wave array. So you might be wondering what's happening in higher dimensions, and indeed there is a recent paper this week by Antoine George and collaborators, where they studied the same model in higher dimensions using DMFT. And what they find is that for attractive interactions, there is a superfluid phase. And here in higher dimensions, it's not so easy to stabilize a charging city wave. So what you get is a region where the charging city wave and the superfluid coexist. So there is phase separation, and there is a first order phase transition between these two phases. And now, if you put the system in a trap, you will find that this using the local density approximation, these two phases, superfluid and thin density wave, coexist. But the point that I want to make is that already in one dimension you see the existence of these phases, and the only difference is that in higher dimensions, all these phases that appear here exceed long range order, whereas in one dimension you get things that have quasi long range order. Okay, so I talked about this thing in the one-dimensional case, and you might be wondering how one could detect this spin gap. And there is a nice proposal by Hans-Peter Büchler and Willis Berger and Peter Zoller on how to do that in spin-cooled gases. And the idea is that you can use Raman spectroscopy to induce transitions between the two high-profile states. And if you compute that in the case of a one-dimensional Hubbard model that I was describing before, you find that indeed there is some sort of sharp at zero temperature release threshold for the excitation, for creating the spin excitation, and this threshold is indeed related to the spin gap. So this would be a way of observing the spin gap in these cases, which is entirely due to the difference in both to the different, the fact that the different species hop with different hopping, and the fact that you have equal number of up and down fermions. So it's, after this, I would like to come to the conclusion. So I hope to have convinced you that in atomic gases, certain conserved quantities can actually yield physics which is different from condensed matter systems. If you sort of study non-equilibrium properties, and in particular quantum quenches in these systems, you typically will not find thermalization. And you can also find interesting steady states in this type of experiments where some observables will have different properties which cannot be inferred from equilibrium properties. And for instance, if you are interested in equilibrium properties, also the absence of relaxation of magnetization, which is in a sense a form of conservation law in these systems, can also yield spin gap phases in particular models of interacting fermions. So thank you so much. Just like to thank my collaborators and other people for the discussion, and also thank you for your attention.
Are there any questions?
So in your Laringer liquid calculation, the distribution you obtained in the end, can it be found by using this generalization of Gibbs distributions, or you this conjecture that can be found?
No,
in other words, you can compute it and get the same as what you get
at
the time limit.
Yeah. So,
but you have an infinite number of parameters to fix, since you have infinite number of conserved quantities.
Yeah, you need to use the occupancies of the bosons that diagonalize into acting Hamiltonian to as conserved quantities to obtain the sort of steady state distribution. And that matches the description that you get by time evolved in the initial state. Mm-hmm. So these two distributions are exactly the same.
Could I ask another question about the kind of generalized Gibbs distribution? Mm-hmm. I guess one question is, for all these other conserved quantities, presumably to think about it, you need to divide the system up into a small bit and a big bit, and the big bit acts as the analog of a heat bath for all these other conserved quantities. Is that the right picture?
No, I mean,
to end up with the analog of the Lagrange multiple. I mean, rather than having delta functions for all these conserved quantities, so it becomes softer in some Gibbs distribution, don't you need to partition the system up and then?
No. It's not the usual. I mean, the way this sort of generalized Gibbs distribution is obtained is not like the usual way one obtains the Gibbs distribution in statistical mechanics, which is what you are talking about. It's more like you take the von Neumann entropy. And you know there are a number of constraints which are sort of typically in integrable systems much more than what you have in generic systems in statistical mechanics. So all these integrals of motion are constraints. And now you maximize the von Neumann entropy subject to these constraints. And that gives you this sort of generalized distribution. And there are some Lagrange multipliers that enter, and this can be obtained from the which can be obtained from the initial condition. Right. So it's a sort of very different approach to statistical mechanics, which Jaynes introduced many years ago. And what he emphasized was that this was some sort of subjective approach to statistical mechanics. I don't know exactly what he meant by subjective, but in a sense, it's not relying on this idea that you have to, that you can consider many ensembles and take one of the symbols in the ensemble, and one of the systems in the ensemble to obtain the distribution, and the rest as a reservoir. So it's more like based on the subjective approach to statistical physics in general, the statistics in general.
When you use this example of dipolar interactions in 1D, then I would expect that only the low-energy Hamiltonian or low-energy physics maps to the Lottinger liquid theory. But there are high-energy terms which break integrability.
Yeah.
What would you expect to be the influence of these terms?
No, that's something that I don't know the answer. I mean, and definitely that's a big issue. I mean, I think that and that's what I have been very careful to say, that what I was studying is the Lottinger liquid. The Lottinger model, and not, and only at the end I just said that these things could have some relevance to experiments which are described by Lottinger liquids, where you have an infinite number of perturbations to the Lottinger model, which is the integrable part of your model, and which in general will break the integrability of the model. So I think, different from the equilibrium case, there is nothing like the randomization group here, or as far as I know, there is nothing like the randomization group that allows you to say that all those perturbations can be neglected, right, in this type of processes. So that's a question that, of course, requires further study. So, yeah.
Are there any other questions? Then I have a question. Are all operators in your theory converge to some, so to say, equilibrium or steady state value?
Well, I haven't looked at all operators.
Is it possible to find an operator which will probably oscillate with time, even for an infinite time?
Maybe. I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, the number of operators you can consider is in principle infinite. So in principle, you could find a vertex which exhibits behavior which is not whether these operators are actually physical and they are relevant to some things that you can observe in the experiment is another question. But I mean, mathematically, one can find weird objects. But my feeling is that there are observables in this type of model which will settle to the steady state.
Okay, thank you. And another question is that there are recent proposal that if you add the Tamanaga-Latish liquid relies heavily on the fact that you can linearize the spectrum of fermions. If you add some quadratic correction to that, probably the excitation of fermions can have some final lifetime.
Yeah.
Do you
This is related to Hans Peter's question. I mean, this is one of the terms that you can add to the Lattinger model, which breaks integrability. You know, so I think that, of course, this has to be studied. And I mean, what might happen is that this lifetime will sort of induce some lifetime in the excitations in the quasi particles that are in the Hamiltonian, and this will change the dynamics in the long time limit. But I mean, how much? That I cannot tell you at the moment. It's an open problem, and I mean, definitely one has to investigate that.
Okay, thank you. So let's thank the speaker again.